Hello and welcome to the Spooky Chris podcast. My name is Chris Ringler, your aforementioned Spooky Chris. I thank you for joining me for another podcast. Today I will be speaking with author Jessica Revolt. In our lives and in our communities, there are people who are active in creating kind of the atmosphere we love, the projects we love, and just kind of adding to things to make our communities more interesting and more vibrant. And a lot of these folks are in the shadows, and they are, you know, the reasons that they get involved in the community aren't for the attention, but just because they want to see kind of these things exist, and they do what they can to kind of help further these efforts. And Jessica Revolt is one of those folks. She's had her hand in many different creative endeavors, from film to community art projects. First and foremost, she is an author. In the region I live in, she manages several social media accounts, but also is a kind of a chronicler of life in this area, in kind of the Rust Belt. And she has been involved, like I say, in so many things. It's going to be really fun to speak to her about it. Most recently, she has joined several of us for an anthology, a protest anthology called A New Liberty, and she is one of the authors involved in that. And we will get into all of this, so stay tuned. Well, hello, Ms. Jessica Revolt. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am very well. Thank you for making some time to talk to me.
Of course. We've been talking about this for about 10 months now, and
it has finally come to pass.
Yes. Glad to make it finally happen.
Well, awesome. 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 I will just dive right into the questions.
Okay.
So what got you interested in writing as a kid?
I got one of those diaries in about first or second grade with a little key and the lock on the side of it.
Oh, yeah.
And that was my best friend as a child. And I have just been a prolific journal writer my entire life. I never stopped journaling through all everything. I've got a hope chest full of journals from the last 45, 44 years now.
So. Wow. Do you ever go back and look at them?
No. Once in a blue moon, I will. This is stupid, but once I had to look back at my journals to see when I had shingles, because I would write all of my symptoms of having shingles to kind of diagnose myself of having shingles again. Because I don't know if you know this, but in my 30s, I kept getting reoccurring shingles.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it was, I didn't have health insurance at the time. So that was very expensive, illness to deal with during that time.
Yeah, that's no fun. I had it once, but I've never had it again, thankfully. That's interesting, because I journaled for a little while, early adulthood into mid 20s, and stopped. And I have them, but I do not go back, because those are some dark, dark times. And I'm like, oh, I don't want to bum myself out.
So. Exactly. Exactly. And I don't, every time I move, I kind of go through them, because the trunk is so heavy now that I have to take all of those books out and put them in boxes. And once in a, in a while, while I'm moving, I'll just kind of scan through it. And I'm like, ooh, I do not want to go. I don't want to go here.
What's funny is I kind of got into my own weird version of scrapbooking I was working a job at a vitamin store, and I would get a, I don't know why I'd get a newspaper every day. just for something to read during the day. And I started like cutting out interesting and we like weird articles and into like, and then just started cutting out weird stuff and putting them in one of two different like scrapbooks. And those are fun to look through because it has like, I would put my concert tickets and movie tickets and like some pictures or articles or just weird stuff. So those are fun. But
Yeah, okay, so there's a name for that right now. It's called junk journaling. And
huh.
it's where you journal, but then you kind of scrapbook around your journal. So like concert tickets, pictures, doodling, magazine cutouts, I don't know if people get magazines anymore. But yeah, and my journals are full of pictures and concert tickets and just stuff that I would throw in there, just because the junk drawer was overflowing. So it is a form of scrapbooking, very therapeutic, hobby to do for your brain and your hands.
Yeah, I mean, I miss that stuff, but yeah, like you say, like I don't really consume a lot of stuff. I don't go to a lot of concerts anymore, really any anymore, and I barely go to movies, so there's nothing to collect really. So
Exactly. And I'm the same way. I would just rather watch movies from the comfort of my couch at home. Concerts have gotten so expensive that there's truly nobody that I'm willing to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars to see live, not anymore.
that is something like, Gen Xers like us, we're of the age now that people are like, oh, you're just old and blah, 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 things aren't the same. But like, it does make me sad that kids today can't experience like the things they love in the way we did. Like even we experienced it more expensively than people, they could see the Beatles for like $10 kind of thing. And now, you and I would go to concerts and it'd be like $15, $20, a concert that was $50 is like, ooh, that's expensive. And it's sad because there's still bands that have lower ticket prices and there's venues, but a lot of like the stuff people want to see, I mean, I think that's why they have so many festivals. It's like, okay, I'm paying a couple $100, but at least I'm seeing like four or five bands I want to see.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's a bummer. Like I feel bad for kids because some of those kind of things that they don't get to really enjoy. And I mean, I think the pressure would be a lot higher if you're paying a lot more money and you feel more, like entitled to like, I'm just gonna film the whole thing because I paid $100 to be here. So,
Yeah, long are gone are the days where you would walk into the gas station to pay for your gas, and there would be a bunch of free lawn tickets to go see Pat Benatar or,
yeah.
the Eagles on the counter, and you just take a few and then go home and pick up your cordless phone and call some friends. Hey, I got free tickets to this. Do you want to go?
Yeah. Or you would get last minute tickets. It's like, oh, maybe the day of, and like we'll just roll up and see. And it's just, and but I do think though some of this is also like we're still kind of room springing like from COVID. We're all just like, we had 3 years where we couldn't do anything, we couldn't see anybody, and we're just still like, I am gonna pay any price to do the things that I missed out on, and you're not gonna stop me.
Exactly. And COVID was it was actually kind of a blessing in disguise because it forced me to slow down and realize that, I get nostalgic for the way we used to do things. This hustle and bustle, distracted world that we live in now is, it's not fun. I miss, getting postcards in the mail from a friend who's on a trip. And, I think we need to bring back snail mail and journaling by hand and the slower paced times where, things were simpler. And I don't know. Does that
I
make me
think
sound old and grouchy?
no. I think we'll start seeing some of that come back though, because I think you're going to start seeing where TikTok and like Reels and all these things were at one point very organic and very like people expressing their creativity and having fun. I think so much now it's people
angling for like X amount of numbers to become an influencer, or they're selling something, or it's so like choreographed. There's no spontaneity. And so I think you're going to see a lot of younger people, I bet, start wanting to do more, analog things, like you say, like, journaling and doing things like that, just because the falseness and the artificiality of, what they grew up with. Like, you go on TikTok and you'll see, oh, cool, there's someone doing a dance. Cool. Nope. There's another one doing the same dance. Oh, yep. Here's another person doing the same dance at a mall. Like, it's.
Yeah, and there's definitely a time and place where that is entertaining. But, I've just since COVID, I've really tried to make an effort when I'm with my friends, when I'm with people that I love, to put my phone away and to just be present. And because I think, we kind of lost that connection and meaning in our friendships and our relationships where people have your full attention and they're not just staring on their phones and doom scrolling. And I shit on social media a lot, even though that's my job. I work in social media, and yeah, and I love it. I love my job, but there's a time and a place, and I think putting the phone down and putting the computer away is for half of the day is just really good for mental health, which seems to be crumbling with a lot of people right now.
Sometimes
So
I wonder, like, because God knows I doom scroll more than my fair share, but I wonder if some of it is like a genuine attempt to try to find what we're looking for, because all of this has been inundated with like advertising and like forced like accounts, like, oh, hey, you're gonna like this person, you have to watch this. We're like, so we can't find what we're, so we just keep looking and we get stuck in that. So it's a habit. It's just like, I mean, it's kind of like my dad smoked and couldn't quit because he didn't know what to do with his hands, is what he always say. He's like, I
yeah.
don't know what to do with my hands. And it's the same thing, as you get nervous, you get like this oh nervous oh kind of
Fidgety.
energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just something to, it's like a fidget spinner. But because the information we want is so mired in like corporate messaging and stuff, it's hard to get to like, okay, cool, I just want to see, because I mean, God knows, I just want to see the whatever X amount of people I am know, and I'm in like, what are they up to? Like, oh, nope, these are just all the other things they want me to see. So
Yeah, exactly.
so so back to like when you were kind of a kid, did you have favorite books or authors that inspired you?
Yes, I loved Madeline L'Engle and Judy Blume, Sweet Valley High books. I discovered Stephen King in the sixth grade, and so
That was a ripe time for every, like, middle school was when everybody, like, and that age, like,
that
it came out, and there, I think everybody's like, wow, that's a big book. It's like, oh my gosh, it's so crazy. So everybody would
yes,
read it.
his books were like Bibles. They were so heavy, but I just fell in love with Stephen King, Dean Koontz. That's when it all started to happen for me,
That, I mean, that really was a magical time, and it makes me wonder what the, I mean, post that, it was kind of Harry Potter was the big gateway book series, and now I'm curious what it is now. There really aren't a lot of things like the Sweet Valley Highs and those kind of series, like there used to be. So it does make me wonder, kind of. I mean, everything has changed. It's, and young adult stuff has kind of aged up a little bit. So it's like Hunger Games and stuff is a little darker than that stuff. So I'm curious.
I'm not sure. I'm out of touch with that because, Layla is 27, so I think her middle school, that she had the Harry Potter books, and she was a reader, so we had no problem, both of us sitting on opposite ends of the couch reading whatever book we were engrossed in at the time and just sitting in silence for hours. And so yeah, I don't know what the what the kids are reading right now. I'm out of touch.
Yeah, no, for sure on that, like, which is funny because I write like I am more in touch with music that younger people are listening to more than books, which is very strange to say, but yeah, that's just it's the case, I guess.
Yeah.
What were you watching as you grew up?
Oh God. I loved horror movies. I was obsessed with The Wizard of Oz. My cousins had a Betamax and they had it on beta, and so I would watch it over and over and over. I was a TV kid. I was always in front of the TV. So whatever, Three's Company and the Jeffersons. And then as I got older, V,
V was great.
Riptide. Remember V? Yeah,
Oh
that
yeah,
series.
Riptide was cool.
I love that.
Simon and
Tales from the
Simon.
Dark Side. Tales from the Dark Side was my favorite. That Friday night. Monsters, Friday the 13th, the series, and Tales from the Dark Side. That was my Friday night when I was, 12, 13, that age.
That was a good time. I which is funny. I was just talking, the last podcast I did, I was talking to my guest about, like, Channel 20 would have like the chiller double or the thriller double feature. Channel 50 would show horror movies, and then at night it was like Monsters, Tales from the Dark Side, and then like like Friday 13th or whatever, like other show horror shows were on. And then see, I thought like Fridays were Star Trek: The Next Generation and like Alien Nation or something. Like, but it was fun. Like, they had really, like, that was, again, that was, like you say, that was my weekend. That was my whole, that was my social life was right there.
Yeah, me too.
What horror movies were you favoring back then?
Oh God, I remember walking to across Dixie Highway to this video store, and I would watch anything and everything. Obviously the classics, Nightmare on Elm Street. God, the 80s were just such a great time for horror movies. I can't remember when we had cable, but there was always something playing on cable that even if I had to watch it over and over and over, I just with horror movies, during that time. But yeah, the usual classics,
That, I mean,
Dog,
which is
yeah.
interesting because, like, that's like one of the big detractors for me for like streaming is that, like, you could go, with video stores, you could kind of go in and like the browsing, like, so you'd see the cover image, you could read about it. Like, it was more of a visceral experience where now it's so, like, on a whim. And, it's just like, oh, it's like a, movie. Oh, Devil Eats a Baby. I don't know. That's a dumb looking image. And he's like, yeah, and you just kind of scroll past. Where back then it was just like you were just in each video store kind of had their own personality on what they had. Like, the mom and pop shops had more like underground, questionable movies, and then the bigger, like Blockbuster and Hollywood Video and stuff had more mainstream. So if you wanted to see the new Indiana Jones, you would go there because they'd have 30 copies of it. But if you wanted to see something really, really crazy, you would go to the mom and pop shops and, like, oh, I've never even heard of this. So what is this?
Exactly. And we, I miss video stores too. I never had a problem picking out movies at the video store, especially for the weekend. I would just, pile them up. And now I can scroll through Netflix or HBO for an hour and not be able to make up my mind. And so I think that ties into like our instant gratification, this culture of instant gratification. Like, it was easier to just pick a few movies and be like, well, these are my movies for the weekend.
Yeah, and you're definitely like, You're like, oh, I don't even know if I really wanted to see this one, but I paid the, $2.50 or $3 for it. I guess I'm watching it. Like, or if it was like
Exactly.
your free movie, rent two, get three, get third free. It's like, well, I get it's my free one. I gotta watch it. I got no choice.
Yeah, I don't want to waste my money.
Yep.
I gotta watch this. And sometimes I'd watch three, four in a night and then go back and be like, oh, I gotta get more now because what am I gonna do Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, it is interesting that like we have more options now, but it's harder. Like the art of discovery isn't there. Like that kind of like it's almost a seduction. Like where it's like you're like, oh, this movie or this book looks, oh, looks pretty good now. And you're like, yeah, it's like now you're just like scroll. No.
Yeah, and it's like that with everything at the grocery store. I don't know if you've ever had a panic attack in the cereal aisle before, but there are so many options now for cereal that it's overwhelming and you just kind of walk away because your head is spinning or, with anything, there's just too many options. It's like it was simple when it was like, well, these are in and oh, this movie is out, so you can't watch that. That's your
It's what's interesting because like it's like ours is becoming kind of the lost generation now because I'm sure kids today because they've grown up with like a million options so they're just like whatever and it's just like very like they want what they want or it's instinctual that one I want this I want this. Like it's they adapted because they grew up with it and we're just like well, no we didn't have these things and then when we get used to we like what we're used to and then it's like whatever if it's like because I fantasize about like man if I had a time machine. I wouldn't go back to see the pyramids. I would go back to the 90s and get Domino's pizza. Like I would get the foods that I miss and like just, I'm like, oh, that'd be so great.
Yeah, and the routine of it, Friday night going to Blockbuster. Joel Rash just got back from a trip. He went to Oregon and he brought me back two Blockbuster stickers. They're on my fridge from the last Blockbuster, and I just had to put them on my fridge like they're a child's report card. I was like, oh, I would love to know what it smelled like in there, Just to smell that smell of Blockbuster on a Friday night.
Which is funny because they were kind of the evil empire back then. They were
It's
the
true.
corporate. They were the corporate. Like they wouldn't carry unrated movies. They would demand R-rated cuts of films and stuff because they had their little, like their
Oh, yeah.
edict of what they would handle. So it's funny. It's funny how that works.
But yeah, I split my time between Blockbuster and the mom and pop video store that had the curtain with the porn behind the curtain.
Yep. No, that was a fun time. So now you've been involved in film, in various degrees. Now, how can you get into that? Like, how did you start kind of being involved in movies?
Well, when we were kids, my cousins had a camera, and you put the VCR, the VHS tape in the side and click it, and we used to make dance videos and stuff like that. In high school, I was in plays all the time. I loved doing theater. And then actually, it was in Flint. I had heard in the Flint Journal, I had read an article about auditions for a film that they were going to do. It was called Diary of a Blade. And I got cast, and we shot it at Hurley. It was kind of like a doctor drama movie, feature length. And that was written and directed by Hobart Harris. Well, he's a brother of Wendell B. Harris Jr., who won the Sundance Film Festival Award for Chameleon Street, which was also made in Flint. So shoot that. It was great. We had a premiere at Whiting. I'm 18 years old at this time. I moved to New York City after that, and it was just nonstop. Student films, being extras on bigger films, and just throwing myself into film and television and stuff like that. And It was great. I absolutely loved it. Yeah, and then of course, I had Layla, so I took a long break from making films to raise a person. And yeah, and then it was just like as soon as Layla graduated from high school, it just started back up again. She was making films in high school, and it was like, oh yeah, I forgot how much I love storytelling in any form, whether it be in a book, on TV, movies, So yeah, and I had, worked on in research, kind of behind the camera on certain projects during that time, and so yeah, that's where that all started. That's where that came from.
That's awesome. Can you talk about some of the projects you'd worked on, like just kind of your experience about any of them?
Yeah, well, we did Half Dead Fred, of course.
Oh yeah, most yeah. So one of the most
This
recent
is
ones was the movie, the film Half Dead Fred.
Yeah, and that was during COVID, so it was great because to have a project like that to work on during that time was excellent. So that way you're not watching the news and going crazy. So yeah, that was just a wonderful experience. Director Bront Theron, he's just an absolute gem of a person to work with. And
What was your
yeah.
role? What was your role on the film?
Oh, well, I was a producer. Actually, I did had a lot of different roles in the film. And I played a small character. I played the hotel clerk. But I felt like the chauffeur for a lot of people, driving people to set, production coordinating, whatever needed to be done on a low budget film, I did it. So it
Well,
was a lot of fun.
that's awesome. What was it like working on a project during COVID? I mean, I had briefly done some stuff on something, and it was weird. Like for I, but it, this was much less professional. I'm a guarantee set, but it still felt weird that we were all doing something together. It was all like outdoors and stuff, but it still felt weird. What was your experience like?
Well, that was another part of my job working on the film was collecting everyone's COVID tests and organizing them. So yeah, it was we wore masks. Everyone had to be tested before they came on set, and then retested again after so many days. I can't remember. I want to say 5 or 6 days. New people were always coming on set different days, and we had people flying in from out of state to be on set. And so everyone had to be tested for COVID. We really wanted to take the precautions to not, we had 3 weeks to shoot this thing, and COVID ripping through the cast and crew would just have derailed our scheduling for that. So yeah, and you know what? Nobody tested positive for COVID. We had one actress who tested positive, and unfortunately she they didn't let her on set, but nobody tested positive for COVID,
That's
which
awesome.
it was great because it was in October when we shot Half Dead Fred, and then that November, December, January was just like the worst COVID wave ever. We had just missed it. We got lucky though. So yeah.
Now, have you found that you prefer kind of working behind the scenes on the production side, or do you like the creative side more, like in front of the camera or even behind a camera?
Both. I love every aspect of creating. So I like being behind the camera. I like, I'm a goofy person, so I like being in front of the camera. Yeah, I like every aspect of it.
That's awesome. Yeah, I know I had you running camera on my first short, so I know you
Oh.
had a little experience with that.
Yeah. I remember being in the woods, and the mosquitoes were terrible that day. But
Yeah,
that
for
was a lot of fun too. And working with Paul, and you. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, for some reason, the two shorts I made, I insisted for some reason they had to be in the woods because it was the because the other one was even worse. Like it was just a one day thing, but it was real, real mosquito-y.
Yeah,
Now,
next time I'll definitely remember the mosquito spray.
oh, good grief. Now you had mentioned it, your daughter is it has gone through, film school and everything, and is going to direct a short coming up. Like, what's it been like seeing, your kid get interested in film and really start to kind of spread her wings?
It's been great. You know, Layla, I made two films when I was pregnant with Layla. One was a short transmitter. I think I sent that to you on Facebook a couple years back, where somebody had converted the film to digital. And so I was pregnant with Layla there, and then I was pregnant with Layla when we shot with Wendell B. Harris, Arbiter Roswell, which that film never got released. So, you know, when Layla was little, and kids are trying to find their niche, their after school activity, whether it be soccer or dance or cheerleading, after every new hobby, I would try and push her into. I'd say, "Do you love it?" And she would say, "Nope, don't ever make me go back there again." And I'd say, "Okay, I'm not paying for it unless you love it." And it wasn't until she got into Flint Youth Theater that she loved it. And that's where she fell in love with theater, acting, movies, and all things surrounding that. So, yeah. You know, watching her making films in high school was a little stressful. You know, I would come home from work or the grocery store, and I would see her hanging out somebody's sunroof with a camera, filming something going down Oak Street, and I'd think, "Oh my God!" But yeah, I'm excited. I'm happy for her. She took a little bit of a break in her filmmaking, and she's back at it. So, and now she has other projects that, hopefully this Bloodsuckers of Bushwick is a stepping stone to these other projects that she wants to do here in Michigan, which would be great because I'd love to work with her. We actually haven't worked together on a film since I was pregnant with her
Oh,
and worked on film.
well, yeah. I hope. Yeah, I hope. I well, I'm not gonna hope. I look forward to when that can kind of come to pass. Then that'll be awesome. And I would think that thinking about it, I would almost wonder if having a theater background would be almost, other than the technical stuff, almost more beneficial than a film school as far as learning kind of the in the trench stuff for making a movie, because so much of it is regimented, and you have to have things like certain things have to be done, and they have to be you have to be ready to roll, and you have to be able to replicate them, and there's so much of that, and it's that kind of discipline almost that, from the theater side, that I think would be really beneficial to really make sure that you are ready to roll and ready to have like a film set ready.
Oh, absolutely. The theater to film pipeline is, well, you learn so much that prepares you for film from theater. And theater kids are great. You know, it was great when Layla was in theater because it reminded me of high school theater. All those really dramatic kids hanging out and coming over to the house. I love it. I love that theater accepts you for who you are, and let your creative flags fly. And it's I lost my train of thought, but yeah, it's very similar to film because you're backstage, you got to plan this, and especially low budget theater, it's the same exact thing. You're not only acting in it, but you have to work behind the stage too on lights and props and costumes. It's very similar.
And I just feel like you get more attuned to and accustomed to the fact that like how much work goes into like the hour and a half or whatever you are on the stage. Like it's hours and hours and hours of work. And I think folks that just like, I'm gonna make a movie, and I have been that person, but like how much planning and everything goes into it. And then it's interesting, and there's so many movies that don't get finished because once that one you go past 1 or 2 days of filming and people are like, oh, we have to come back and do this again. It's like, well, yeah, this is going to take a little while. They just lose their they lose the excitement, and if they're not getting paid, it's like, well, I'm busy.
Yeah, and unfortunately, your the job that supports you has to, take priority over creative projects sometimes. But and that's the fun of it though, is you just need the right group of people who will see it to the end, no matter what. Hey, you're serving hot and readies. Heck yeah, I'll be there to help you out because I want to see you finish your project to the end.
Yes.
Even if I'm not getting paid. And it has never been about being rich and famous for me. It's just been about living comfortably enough to do what I love and, help other people do what they love. And is that too much to ask? In America, it is.
Nowadays it
Because
is. Now it is.
Right. But
Yeah, absolutely. Like that has been my experience too, is that even like almost as much as important as having someone that can be right for a role is the people that kind of are right for the crew or the group, that there's no drama. Everybody just kind of wants to do this project and just kind of be creative, and it's yeah, you're right. It's a different kind of fun than other endeavors.
yeah.
And when you kind of get like a good group like that, it's pretty neat.
Yeah, and then you understand why some directors work with the same group of people all the time because they know these people are going to show up, they're going to do their best, and they're going to see it through. And that's it says a lot to find your people that are going to come through for you and support you. And I say that about Flint a lot. There, I have lived in many, many different places, but I've never had the support system like I have in Flint. And I think community is very important, especially right now during this awful time in our country's history. But that's another podcast. There's so many talented, creative people in Flint, and yeah, once you find that group that will work and come through for you, it's priceless, really.
Which I'm going to come back to Flint in a second, but I have one more like film question. So if you were able to have you ever wanted to make your own film, like direct a film?
No.
How and that
Maybe
and
when
that
I was younger. Yeah, maybe when I was younger, but now that no, I'm no. Because I know I've never done it. I've never directed a play or a film, and I don't know, the imposter syndrome is there saying you're not good enough but it's not something that I would tackle at this point in my life. Ask me again when I'm 80.
I this comes down to like what I feel with most things. If I was able to do it, I think you or anybody else could do it. Like I just feel like it clearly can't be that hard if I did it a couple times. Not necessarily well, but like I do understand like where you're coming from, but
Yeah, well, I think it's personality type too. I managed a restaurant once and I was a terrible manager because I really hate barking orders at people and telling people what to do. I would always try to be the most gentle restaurant manager. Like, I'm really sorry because I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings or make anybody feel upset. And And I don't have that crack the whip director part of my personality. I'm a softer person, and yeah, I don't have that part of me to direct, especially a film or a play.
Which I mean, that's fair because I'm kind of the same way, and I lucked out in that I didn't have to do that. I didn't, a couple times I did it, but you're like, we'd talked about, I guess that's part of the getting the right people together so you don't have to sit there and get on people's back about it.
Right, exactly. And so, that's why when I quit managing that restaurant, I said I'll never manage anything again because it just makes me feel icky. I just don't like that. I don't like telling people what they did wrong or, ugh, no, save that for other people.
That's fair. Now we had talked for a second about Flint. Like before, I kind of get involved, into what you've been involved with locally and in Flint. Like, what makes Flint so artistically rich and such a unique place to do these kind of like to make films or to get involved in the arts?
I'm not really sure. I can't really put my finger on it, but I do know that, in the time that I've been here in Flint, I've just connected with the same kind of misfit creative people who have found that the city is very inspiring. And we all agree that there's just something about Flint that makes the creative juices flow. I'm super excited, and I love supporting other people and what they're doing. Flint, Michigan Films, I know they're opening a studio in the Dort Mall. That's fantastic.
That's
I'm
cool.
stoked about that. Dark Room Productions is putting on a play at the Flint Local this weekend and next. I can't wait to go see that. Flint Community Players, they have a Shel Silverstein
Oh,
dirty play going on. I'm gonna go see that. I just love supporting other people and their art because it's different. It's not like any other place I've ever lived. And I don't know, maybe it's there's something in the water that makes us come up with these just fabulous ideas and projects.
I kind of wonder because it's always been, a blue collar city, and I wonder if it's so far removed from, like New York, Chicago, LA, like these kind of meccas for like film and music and the arts, those kind of like arts that like everybody kind of goes in knowing that you're doing it for, passion and love above all. So it's a different expectation and it's a different drive. So I mean, I kind of wonder if it's, like everybody always, you'd love for your creative endeavor for whatever it is, to be discovered and beloved, but going in understanding like, we're doing it here, we know the limitations financially in the area and as far as resources, but we still want to do this thing, and you're doing it for more of, we're just doing it. Like, I'm not going to take no, we're doing it. Like, and that's just how it is.
I 100% agree with all that you just said. It's everything that you just said. That's it. And it's not like, this, oh, I'm after fame and fortune. No, I love my simple life. I love my 23-year-old car. I don't need all that to have a fulfilling life. I just want to do things that I love and live comfortably. And writing, working on projects that roll into the city, that's great.
Which I had mentioned in the intro I did for this is the fact that you are one of those people that you are active in so many things in and around the city, but behind the scenes. So what gets you involved in these projects? You know, are there any that you kind of can think of that have been really rewarding for you?
All of them are rewarding in one way or another. Just being a supportive ally to other creative people is rewarding. Yeah, you know, a lot of these projects have just kind of fallen into my lap. You know, somebody has reached out and said, "Hey, Jessica, do you know anybody who blah, blah, blah? Yeah, I can help you. You know, I want to help you." That type of thing. Yeah, I've just been incredibly lucky. I've been really lucky.
Well, you're definitely one of those people. It's funny you mentioned Joel Rash, who is kind of a local kind of patron saint of music and the arts in the area. Which, you know, again, it's interesting because he is near legendary in this region, but like people may not know his name elsewhere. But it's interesting because you're similar in that you just know people, and we had talked about this previously that when some street artists were interested in coming here to do like a mural project that you just happened to know people and were able to help them kind of do their, you know, in what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and if I don't know, I know who to ask to find out. And I guess that works with, because actually, like with the Greetings from Flint projects with In Decline, I didn't know Joe Scapani. I wasn't really sure who was running Flint Public Art Project at that time. I just did a little bit of research and just reached out to him on Facebook Messenger. "Hey, you don't know me, you know, one of those kind of, but here I'm working on this project and I was wondering if you could help me out or if you would like to get involved." And of course, you know, he was a wealth of information and he was able to get us in contact with the land bank and all these businesses who wanted murals. And that's what came out of that project. So, you know, even if I don't know where to go, you know, it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt to reach out and ask, "Hey, you don't know me, but, you know, do you know who I would talk to? Who would be able to help me with this?" And so, yeah. And Joel is another one, Joel, because Joel knows everybody in
Yeah.
Flint. And so a lot of times, you know, I'll ask Joel, "Hey, who should I talk to about this project or that?" And he usually knows right off the bat, "Oh, you need to talk to this person." Okay.
Well, is there stuff that you want to be like, are there any project kind of things that you haven't been able to be involved in that you kind of hope an opportunity arises at some point?
No, nothing that I can think of right now.
Have you gotten to do any theater since your younger days?
I haven't. And unfortunately, that is only because of the restriction of, you know, having a job that I needed to pay my bills and, you know, just not being able to commit to rehearsals 4 or 5 nights a week, that kind of thing. Eventually, one day, I would love to get back into theater, you know, when my schedule allows for it. I think it would be great.
Well, awesome. Like I appreciate you making time to talk. I last thing I wanted to ask you is, so do you have anything you're working on? Any kind of personal projects or anything that the world might see at some point?
Yes, actually, I am working on a collection of essays and short stories right now. I have a lot more free time in my life to work on this, and it makes me so happy to be able to do what I love. So I get my work done for the first part of the day. I journal for, 10, 20 minutes for the day. And then I have, another collection of essays and stories that, maybe one day I'll publish both of the collections. But and I had my blog. I had that blog for years and took it down because, like I said, I just want to go back to that physical book copy, not reading online type of thing. I like to keep a low-key profile on stuff like that. I think because it means so much to me, and putting it online sometimes spoils it. People and their ruthless comments and stuff like that. So,
Yeah,
so.
that is interesting, is that we've for whatever reason we have become so entitled on our opinion that we feel like everyone needs to know it, and it's more trying to show how smart you are than like trying to engage with people. It's like, look at how clever I am.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I understand. Well, I certainly hope that the world gets to see these projects someday. I was very thankful that you joined us to do the New Liberty book. It was great to be able to include you. So I'm glad that
Well,
little
thank
bit
you.
is out there.
I'm so happy to be included in that project. And when you had asked me back in the winter, I was in a really dark place and did not want to give you any writing that I was doing at that time. After just It took a long time to bounce back from the grief of last fall. But yeah, things are better and looking up, so.
Well, good. And like I say, I'm excited to hear that you're working on stuff, and I look forward to the world seeing it, and I'm excited to see when the day comes, Layla's film when she gets that out into the world as well. And
Oh yeah, that's going to be fun. I think she's planning on premiering it at the local this fall.
that's what I had heard. So that'll be great. But thank you so much for making some time to talk to me. I really appreciate it. It was fantastic to catch up.
Yeah, this was nice. Sorry it took me so long.
No problem at all. You take care. I'll talk to you soon.
Right, bye.
Bye. It was a genuine honor to be able to speak with author Jessica Revolt today, to talk about kind of nostalgia and our love of kind of 80s culture and video stores and movies and everything, and then to talk about her experience working in film. We had spoken recently with her daughter Layla and her producer Peace about Bloodsuckers of Bushwick, and Jessica spoke on that a little bit, and it was just a great conversation, and really kind of speaking with someone who is involved in community arts work, and again, like someone that you don't see out in front of the cameras and getting the spotlight, but who was doing the work to make sure that things come together. I thank you. You can find all of my podcasts at spookychris.com or on your favorite podcast provider. All of my books and links to all that and my blogs and reviews and everything are at spookychris.com as well. I look forward to speaking at you again because this is kind of a one-way conversation, isn't it? I look forward to coming back and doing this again. So you guys take care.